Unless we sit down now, while we have time, and begin to make some plans so that either there is training available for people who want it for the new industries that will open up, or income available for the people who have no other form of income, I think we are going to be extremely unfair to our soldiers, and we're going to be extremely unfair to those Americans who've gone in war industry and contributed all they could to the welfare of the country.
Well, ladies, the telephone questions are coming in here from Sumter. We must get to them. While they're being assorted, Don Gardner has a word to say about today's Honor City.
Sumter, founded by and named for General Thomas Sumter, who drove the British from the Low Country in one of the most critical campaigns of the Revolution, combines the grim business of war with magnificent semi-tropical beauty. Sumter's Shaw Field, one of the world's largest basic training schools, is turning out thousands of American and British flying cadets, our fighting aviators of tomorrow. We are proud to salute Sumter, South Carolina, for its wholehearted contribution to swift and decisive victory, and to salute WFIG, the Blue Network station in Sumter, for its participation in today's program.
The first question from Sumter is to Mrs. Lane from Magistrate C.M. Edmonds of Sumter. After the war, shouldn't there be some regulations to keep capital and labor from trampling on one another?
Regulations won't keep capital and labor from trampling on one another if they want to. I hope that after the war, and I think you can see signs of it, the stupid individuals who are classified both as labor leaders and as industrial leaders will see that it is necessary for them to cooperate more than they have done in the past. You can't make people behave by police action.
The next question is to Dr. Burns from J. Cliff Brown, president of the Kiwanis Club of Sumter. South Carolina has passed an appropriation and formed a committee to deal with post-war employment. Have any other states followed suit?
Yes, a number of states have already begun to set up commissions to deal with post-war employment. Furthermore, the states are not the only ones that are doing it. As you know, the industry groups have begun to be set up to deal with this same problem. The Committee on Economic Development, for example, the committees of the Chamber of Commerce, committees of a great variety of business groups have already recognized the importance of planning for an orderly transition in the post-war period and are now, like the states, getting to work.
The next one's to Mrs. Lane from Mortimer Weinberg of Sumter, South Carolina. If boys of 18 years are old enough to be soldiers, aren't they old enough to be voters?
Yes, I think so, and I think one good thing in this present situation is the beginning realization that people are not children until they're 26. If we had a proper educational system, our boys would be men at 18 in their point of view. I think we give too much emphasis to voting, however. Our protection of our liberties is not in our voting, but in our constitutional law.
Next question is to Dr. Burns from L.E. Purdy of Sumter. Should not our defense program include immediate plans for drafting capital and labor as well as soldiers?
I'm afraid I can't answer that question because it deals with a large number of difficult questions of economics and policy which I haven't studied. And I like, on the whole, when I'm giving certain answers, to confine myself to a field that I know something about.
All right, the next one's to Mrs. Lane from Raymond Blanding. Wars are followed by depressions. What is being done to ensure post-war America against depression?
Good heavens. I don't know. The work that we all do, the attitude we all take, the amount of self-reliance and the responsibility that we all have will settle the whole fate of the world, including the after-war depression. We may not have one this time.
May I just add to that, that in addition to the fact that industry groups state governments are already trying to see what can be done to avoid depressions in the future, I should also have mentioned that that organized labor has post-war planning committees, and further, that the organization with which I'm connected, namely the National Resources Planning Board, has been given the responsibility for trying to pull some of these plans together so that they can be presented to the people to let the people judge for themselves whether or not they think these ideas are any good.
The next question is to Dr. Burns from Eleanor S. Richardson, Judge of Probate Court of Sumter. We are fighting for the four freedoms, but what assurance have we that things will be normal after the war or that those in the service will get a square deal?
I'm afraid we've no assurance at all that things are going to be normal after the war. Everyone that I talk to seems to have a very pessimistic view about the prospects of immediate return to normalcy. Furthermore, precisely because I am gravely concerned about those who are returning from the war getting a square deal, I think it's the responsibility of all of us now to look around, see what can be done by us as individuals, and to call upon our governments to do everything which must be done to make sure that those fellows coming home do get a square deal. It's not going to be done just by hoping.
Here's one from Patricia Burke of the studio audience here to Mrs. Lane. How can the people who have an unsteady income do without Social Security?
Well, I've had an unsteady income all my life. I've earned my living ever since I was 16. I have... If you want to buy insurance, buy it from a private company. The insurance that you buy from a government, you must pay back to yourself. And this system of enforced insurance has been disastrous, in my opinion, though not in that of Dr. Burns, wherever it has been tried. Disastrous to the individual, disastrous to the society in which it is enforced.
Dr. Burns, here's a question from William Palmer of Hawthorne, New York, who's in the studio, to you. You say people elect their leaders. They don't elect bureaucrats or administrative czars, do they?
No, but if they don't like the things that the bureaucrats and the administrative czars do, who in turn are appointed by the leaders the people elect, then I think it's up to the people to do something about letting their legislators know they don't like those appointments. And from time to time they do that. After all, these czars that you talk about do come and go. Why do they come and go? Because here and there are some people who take the responsibilities of citizenship very seriously and write and tell their legislators just what they think about what their government's doing. I'd like to see a world in which more of us did that kind of thing. Put ourselves on the record to the people we have elected when we think that they or the people who they are responsible for appointing are not doing what we think should be done.
Mrs. Lane, Dr. N. Herman in the studio here wants you to answer this question. Do you think that group planned medicine will or would deteriorate the individual rights of the American people?
I think that all mutual action, free mutual action, action in which the government's police power does not enter, is good.
Dr. Burns, here's one from Stanley Noparst, the studio. What agencies will be set up to keep the country from another depression?
I'm not a prophet, and the alphabet is being very rapidly used up nowadays with the agencies, so it's a little hard to say what agencies will be set up. I don't think it's possible to say at the present time. I do think we shall probably have to contemplate for a period immediately after the war, some continuation of the controls which we now have. And I would add that in saying that, I don't think I'm speaking merely as an individual or even as a bureaucrat. I was present at a public meeting only yesterday, when William Batt, who is known to you all as a leading industrialist, made exactly the same statement, that he thought the country would not only have to plan for, but really would have to expect and hope that there would be some continuation of some of the controls that we have at the present time until we can get over the difficult period of post-war adjustment.
We've had a little trouble with the line to Sumter. We'll go back to one of the questions which were not answered in the beginning. One from Dr. Burns to Mrs. Lane. Will you give an example of any plan which is put forward by any responsible person in this country which involves police enforcement upon the common people of the ideas of supposed superiors.
Yes, I'll give you examples from here to breakfast. This country's full of them. Here's an item from a little country paper, Montrose, Missouri. I'll read it. In our community is an aged widow who has only a lifetime interest in a small farm. In order to live, she raised chickens. A neighbor milked her cow for her on shares. In 1941, she had part of the farm planted to wheat to feed her chickens. She is now in a wheelchair being cared for in the home of her son-in-law, a country preacher. She has received notice from the AAA that her farm marketing excess was 86 8/10 bushels. Rate of penalty, 49 cents a bushel. Amount of penalty, $42.53. She is not able to pay it. Now, that was the idea of the ever-normal granary, which is as old as Egypt and has never worked. It was the idea that a group of experts in Washington can take better care of American farmers and better care of America's food supply than the farmers can. Jefferson said, if we were directed from Washington when to sow and when to reap, we should soon want for bread. But the reactionaries do not believe Jefferson, and I'll read you another item from another little country town, Petaluma, California, the nation's egg bowl. All male chicks hatched here are now being drowned promptly. Owing to the shortage of feed, poultry growers can no longer grow both broilers and egg layers. One grower alone drowns 8,000 potential broilers every day.
I'd just like to say one thing about that. If the AAA is such a foolishly thought-up device, why is it that the farmers keep on voting to continue it?
They don't. The people who vote are a minority of a minority, and a majority of the minority vote yes.
I don't...
I'm sorry, ladies, but our time is up. May I thank you on behalf of the American Economic Foundation for your fine participation today. Next week, being Thomas Jefferson's 200th anniversary, Wake Up America will bring you a discussion entitled, What Would Jefferson Do Today? The speakers will be the Honorable Samuel B. Pettengill, former congressman from Indiana, and author of Jefferson the Forgotten Man, the Honorable Norman Thomas, chairman of the Executive Committee of the Post-War World Council, and Mr. Henry Morton Robinson, senior associate editor of the Reader's Digest, nationally known author whose latest book, Fantastic Interim, has just been published. During this program, questions will be accepted from Huntington, West Virginia. Now, here is a special message to any Wake Up America listeners who plan on visiting New York next week. You're invited to be our special guests here in the studio. Simply write your Blue Network station or Wake Up America, 295 Madison Avenue, New York City, and we will arrange for you to receive your admission ticket. Now, here is Don Gardner.
If you desire a printed copy of today's discussion, send 10 cents in coin or stamps to Wake Up America, 295 Madison Avenue, New York City. And remember, if you cannot go to war, your dollars can. Buy your share of the bombs for Berlin and Tokyo by buying your share of war bonds. We thank you for listening today and invite you to be with us next week at this same time. Wake Up America has been presented as a public service and came to you from New York. This is the Blue Network.